This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have questions about diet, nutrition, give us a call and talk to Susan. The number's in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana, and she is a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness. She is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find Susan on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. Questions about diet and nutrition are invited. Again, those phone numbers, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
It's a crazy day out there today. You made it just in here.
Just
by the skin of your teeth before that downburst.
That's
that
right.
Downpour. So
it was coming down pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed that it will have dissipated by the time it's time for you to head out of the building.
That sounds good.
So how are you?
I'm good. Happy to be kind of getting the semester rolling and get everything going for fall. So
second
that's exciting.
Week of September already.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we don't have anyone lined up to talk with us at the moment, so you suggested we might talk a little bit about fiber.
Yes, I was thinking about fiber and ways to kind of increase fiber in one way, and then also ways to boost not only fiber, but make recipes a little bit healthier overall. And so we can kind of deal with those two things. I think you hear a lot about fiber now, and you hear a lot about whole grains, for example, which is one easy way to boost fiber. Fiber is important for a lot of things. We think of it as being very helpful for preventing constipation and keeping the bowels moving regularly, and that certainly is very true and very important. But we're also finding that it's very helpful for other things, particularly decreasing blood cholesterol levels. Certain types of fiber we know help bind some of the bile acids that form cholesterol or are important in that whole cholesterol makeup, and that can decrease cholesterol in the body. And those would be more the gummy fibers. Those we might call soluble fibers. Those would be things that you might think of as gummy. For example, probably one of the low cost, and right now with the high cost of food, I think we're really looking for ways that you can boost the diet with things that don't cost that much. And so really one of the easiest things people can do is add more dry beans and peas and lentils, more legumes. And even if it's canned, certainly if you're watching sodium, you'd want to rinse those beans because they're going to be a little bit higher in salt. But even simple things like making a salad, adding some garbanzo beans to it, really boosts the fiber, boosts the protein as well. Using red beans, black beans, edamame has become very popular as a snack. And so just using that as a real high fiber snack with the soybeans. And so looking at that is important. Other fruits and vegetables, most fruits tend to be pretty high in soluble fiber, particularly things like pears. We think of apple pectin. Berries have soluble fiber. And then many vegetables have both insoluble and soluble. So the insoluble helps move things along. The soluble or gummy fiber really helps maybe modulate blood cholesterol levels and also may play a pretty strong role, fiber in general, in keeping blood sugars down. And so when we eat foods with more fiber, of course, sometimes it takes longer to chew, and that's a bonus because then maybe we don't eat as many calories or eat as much food. And also it takes longer to get through the stomach and digestive system. And so we may feel full faster, which is good because we know as a general rule, as Americans, we're in a rush society. We tend to eat quickly. Often we eat more than we need at a time, or we're not registering our fullness as much as we probably should. We continue to eat. So boosting particularly these fruits and vegetables. And then whole grains, as far as wheat fiber, tends to be more that insoluble, tends to help with regularity. And very simple things to do there are really just look on the labels of foods. If you look at a whole wheat bread, for example, that fiber content is going to be usually 2 or 3 grams per serving or per slice, whereas regular wheat bread, if it's not whole wheat, might be 0 or 1 gram of fiber. So very simple ways people can add fibers, using whole grains, using things like a high-fiber cereal. We have all kinds of things out there like Bran Buds and All Bran and some of those that are 10 or more grams of fiber per serving. Some people tell me, well, that's a little too much.
That's a little. You got to work your way up to
that. Yes, work your way up to that.
It's like the Olympics of fiber.
And, you know, an easy way to do that is to even mix that with a cereal that's not that high in fiber. For example, if you really love Rice Krispies, like some people just really go crazy for Rice Krispies, there's not much fiber in there. There's also not much fat or sugar. But maybe you add just a tablespoon or two of All Bran to that and you eat it together. That's tolerable for many people, and still you're going to get...
Throw some fruit in there.
Throw fruit in there, too, would be a great way to balance that out. Another type of cereal that's real high in the gummy fiber is something you'd think of that really does look gummy, and that's oatmeal. And so oatmeal itself is very helpful for blood sugar regulation and cholesterol reduction as well. You see all the ads about oatmeal and lowering cholesterol if you start eating oatmeal every day. And there are very good studies to show many people will drop their cholesterol 4, 5, 6 percentage points if they're consistently eating a cup or a cup and a half of oatmeal every day. So that's a real benefit, too. Usually when we eat more fiber, we're going to drop something else out of the diet. I was just working with some clients this morning, and we were talking about boosting fruit. And after one of the guys I was working with was looking at his diet, he said, well, I don't think I'm going to have room for dessert. So that's a good bonus, right? You start eating more fruit. And, of course, it is sweet, but we don't think of it as dessert sometimes. But once you increase fruit, you may not need that 400-calorie chocolate chip cookie that you're used to having. So everything changes in terms of the calorie content can really be in your favor as well.
Okay. So now we've got breakfast is pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Got that covered. We've got toast, whole grain toast, and we've got good cereal, maybe lunchtime or dinner time, maybe we'd have some legumes in there. What about snacking?
Yeah.
What can we do to have something to snack on that will fill us up a little bit, keep us going, and will satisfy us, and on top of it all, be good for us, too?
Okay. Well, one of the things that's real easy, if people are interested, are a lot of the snack bars that are out there now. There are some snack bars that are not high in fiber. Their regular granola or cereal bars might have a gram or two, but there are many new varieties now that have 5 or 6 grams of fiber per bar. I was just snacking on my way here in the car, actually, I will have to say. And some of the ones, the one I had today happened to be Kashi Bar, but there are a lot of different bars that I think there's Special K bars and different ones now. There's the Fiber One Bar and several of them that actually have as much fiber as a couple fruits. And so once you get into this 5 or 6 grams of fiber, we're really shooting for all Americans to have at least 20 or 25 grams a day, and preferably more like 30, but at least 20 or 25 grams. And I think the average intake now is around 10 or maybe 12 grams a day of fiber. So if you look at a bar that might be 150 or 180 calories, and that's 5 grams of fiber, that's pretty good. The other thing for snacking that works really well is just to choose a high-fiber cereal and then maybe throw a few nuts and dried fruit into it, make your own trail mix. Things like frosted mini wheats, for example, or corn bran, or some of those that are 4 or 5 grams of fiber, work really well when you pair them, you know, with maybe a few cashews or a few almonds or a few soy nuts, and then you throw in a little cranberry, dried cranberries or so. And that can be a good size for those snack packs is really a snack bag size of.
And that's a pretty little bag.
Mm-hmm. It's about a half a cup.
Because
you end up getting. With cereal and nuts and dried fruit, it's quite caloric. It tends to add up fast. But a small container of that really is satisfying. And then the other thing you always want to think of is whenever you add more fiber, you really have to add more fluid because your body's going to need fluid to help process that fiber. And sometimes clients will tell me, gosh, I've increased the fiber, but they become more constipated. And that can happen if you don't have the fluid to help your body digest that fiber.
Okay. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us this afternoon to talk about diet and nutrition here on the Afternoon Magazine. If you've got a question, give us a call, 333-9455, 333-WILL, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, we've got a couple of callers now, so let's talk with our first listener this afternoon on a cell phone. Line 1, good afternoon.
Hi. Excuse me. Thank you. Well, I have kind of an odd question, and I'll preface it by saying I'm not so much looking for a concrete answer, but the doctor I've been talking to and I have come to kind of an impasse, and so I'm trying to talk to health professionals whenever I get the opportunity and see if they've ever heard of something like this or have any ideas. So here's the problem I've been having. In the last couple of years, it seems like, it's come to pass that I don't seem to be able to eat any oils or any fats except olive oil. And this includes nuts and seeds, all animal fats, dairy fats, avocados. I get sick, not in my digestive system, but I end up just feeling generally sick throughout my whole body whenever I eat them. My doctor looked at my gallbladder and I guess, did some liver panel tests with blood tests and said that, that my gallbladder was mostly okay, is a direct quote, and then decided that it must be allergies. And because I had some other symptoms, like I don't want to put anybody off their food here, but my digested food, when it left my body, was sort of turned an extremely pale, almost white color when I was eating the oils and fats like egg yolks and things. And when I stopped doing that, fortunately, it returned to normal. But that sort of made me think, that doesn't sound like an allergy. And so, like I said, I'm just trying to run this by people who work in the diet or nutrition field or digestive field, anybody, to see if they've ever heard of something like this.
Okay. Well, yeah, I certainly have known clients who've had trouble digesting fats in one way or the other. And I think, as you mentioned, a lot of times what we look at or think about is maybe gallbladder, or is there something going on in the body where you're not able to break down the fats? One thing, I guess, I don't know if you've tried this, but obviously, there could be many, many things going on. So I would never know for sure or certainly pretend to try to say what it is, but sometimes people can do well if they try to take some extra enzymes. And this becomes tricky too, because some enzymes in supplemental form really digest in the stomach and they're not very helpful, but there are kind of coated enzymes that have maybe a combination of lipase, which is a fat type enzyme, in it. And you may find that that helps you digest fats better. Now, certainly it doesn't always work, but it's always worth a try, I think, as something if you're having trouble with digestion.
I did try some enzymes that were supposed to work over a broader range of pH levels, including one that has lipase. They're very helpful for me when I eat things. I got a good quality one of the same brand that helps a lot with, like, beans, that sort of thing. But the one that was supposed to help with fats didn't really make any difference when I tried that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was coated for – do you mean that if it was coated, it would pass on through the stomach and into the small intestine?
Yeah, sometimes they're coated in a way that they don't get broken down as much in the stomach. And there are different, brands and different varieties. It might be worth trying that as another thing to consider doing. And I don't know if it helps to have just a little bit of the fat at one time. You've probably tried that, but or if that doesn't make any difference at all.
Well, a little bit means I feel a little bit sick, and a lot means I feel a lot sick. So, it's not like I have a little bit and I instantly feel sick. It's proportional to how much I've eaten.
Yeah.
Okay, but I tried the lipase, but I hadn't tried a coated tablet.
That would be worth trying. And the good news is if you can handle the olive oil, that's great, because that gives you a source of fat and that gives you some essential fatty acids. And
I would say probably up to 4 or 5 tablespoons of olive oil a day. I have to remember to put it on things, but I'm getting quite used to it. And I think it's done me good.
Oh, sure. I'm sure it has.
I think I've lost weight somehow just from eating olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
So No, that's been fine, and I'm eating actually quite a healthy diet because I can't eat anything chunky or processed at all. I'm just, my concern is, for example, like I'm also having trouble with soy and I can't eat anything with gluten in it, and I'm worried that like my doctor and I are overlooking something, you know, that maybe 2 or 3 years down the road we're going to go, oh, you know, gosh, you know, it's too bad we didn't know that 3 years ago.
Right.
And we could have. And so, yeah, and I've looked up a lot online for ideas, and I'm assuming that the gallbladder tests are pretty, they did that one where they run the dye through you and it shows your gallbladder functioning or not.
Right.
And so I'm guessing that those are pretty reliable in terms of, you know, it's working, or, I mean, that, yeah. Okay, well, anyway, I appreciate the tip for the coated lipase, and I'll keep an eye out.
Okay, and also I would suggest, I know that sometime this summer, are you familiar with the program People's Pharmacy?
On the NPR program.
Yeah, yes, we run it on Saturday afternoon at 5. Well, they have a website. And I think you can go back and listen to past programs. Mm-hmm. And this summer, they did one devoted to digestive health.
Okay.
So it might be something, there might be something there for you, too.
Yes, yeah. I'll
Good
look
idea.
For that. Okay, great. Well, okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat, our guest this afternoon. Let's take another call. Listener in Urbana, line 2. Hi.
Hi, I have two questions, and I need to hang up, and I'll listen offline. The first one is that in a lot of, especially the cheaper grain products like breads, you'll see that they're high in fiber, and you look at the ingredients, and they do that sort of by cheating, by adding typically methyl cellulose. And my question is methyl cellulose just as good as the natural fiber for both purposes? And my second question is, so far as lowering cholesterol is concerned, which of the supplements you can buy, I'm thinking especially when you travel, it's so hard to eat when you're traveling and to get fiber because, you know, restaurants don't serve it. Even if they serve salad, it's iceberg lettuce, which has nothing in it. So, you know, these supplements, you know, there's psyllium, and I think there's even methyl cellulose. Which of those lowers cholesterol?
Okay, and hang on, or are you going to ring off?
Well, I'll ring off.
Okay.
Do you have any questions about my questions?
No, those are great questions.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Well, the first question, there are other fibers that are added to grain products, added to bread products, added to even some of the bars and other things out there. It might be this methyl cellulose. It might be some other food products that are added that add extra fiber. And as a general rule, I mean, what you want to look for on, particularly on bread or on a grain product, is that it's still the first ingredient, 100% whole wheat or 100% whole rye or whole grain, because we really want it to, most of this fiber to come from the natural food itself. And not that the other fibers won't be helpful, but some of the fibers are more fillers, but not necessarily as good as the actual grain. So, for example, if you ate wheat berries or rye berries, I mean, you're actually getting all the fiber and all the B vitamins, and that is the best way to have it. But, of course, that's not how we can always eat as far as the grain. So when it gets formulated into bread and you see that it's 100% whole wheat as the main ingredient, that would be the preference. So that is a very good point. I don't know, you know, percentage-wise, let's say, how much one would be more helpful than the other, but I think that is something that definitely food companies do, and we want to try to get more towards the whole grain as much as possible. So that's something to look for. As far as lowering cholesterol, psyllium is good. Psyllium is a good soluble fiber. Flax seeds have good soluble fiber, and so that's something a lot of my clients will take with them. They'll take ground flax, and they'll just put that into yogurt or put that into things when they're traveling. And that's helpful. I think when you think of fiber for lowering cholesterol, you do want to think that it's got to be a long-term thing. So in other words, if you are traveling some and you miss out a few days, and if it's just periodic, I wouldn't really worry too much about it. I'd think of it adding fibers when you're gone more from an anti-constipation standpoint, because for a lot of people, they travel a week and they have trouble with that because they're not getting the fibers in their regular food. But the body really works over weeks and weeks and months at a time to actually lower lipids with these types of diets. But psyllium would be an easy one. Again, I think ground flax would be an easy one because that's an easy thing that's portable as well and a little less expensive. And then there are things like Metamucil. It has some psyllium, has some soluble fiber in it as well. And that would be easy for people to take with them and use too. So those would be things that I think would all be fine. They'd all work. And the amount of lipid lowering that a fiber does may not be tremendous, and certainly not anything near what a cholesterol lowering drug may do or what some of the other supplements might do. But as part of a whole package of what you're trying to do, it's very helpful. And so I would say whatever you like that's easy. The psyllium type things people like because they can just pour that into orange juice or something and drink it, and it's very easy even when you're traveling.
Okay, very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with questions about diet nutrition this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. And we have a toll-free number. That's good if you're outside the local dialing area. 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. You mentioned wheat berries, Susan, and I've had these just a couple of times. They were prepared for me, mm-hmm. so I've never prepared them. Where do you get them, and how do you fix them?
Yeah, you can buy those in bulk in natural food stores. Generally, they'll have those. I don't know if I've seen them in... They may be in some of the main grocery stores now, too, but typically if you go to more of a natural store, you'll have the bins, and you'll be able to get the rye berries and the wheat berries and all kinds of the grains themselves. Some of those, because they're, you know, if you look at them, they're just a very hard, small grain, and they need to be generally cooked for a good hour or more sometimes, and so it takes a while, but you can cook up a lot of that and keep that in the refrigerator for the whole week if you wanted to. And once you cook those up, they don't have a lot of flavor themselves, but you might see them in salads, or maybe you've had them in something like a vinaigrette. And what works really well for those, if you have them cooked, and then you could add in dried fruit and a little bit of nuts and maybe even just a teeny bit of olive oil or so to that. And that makes a really nice kind of chewy salad.
When I had it, it was it had fruit and had a little bit of maple syrup in it, which was nice.
That would be very good. Very good. And that works out really well. And so the biggest thing with a lot of those grains is you do have to really kind of boil them or simmer them maybe for an hour or more. Usually, you know, a good rule of thumb is if you have a cup of the rinsed grain, you're probably going to need a cup and a half or 2 cups of water to go with it anyway, sometimes a little bit more. But those work out really super because that is the natural grain. And it's kind of like even if you have pasta, the whole wheat pasta made out of that whole grain is just so much better for you. Mm-hmm. And now that so many of those are available and easy to find, it's a lot easier to cook those and not have to be a big problem. But there's a big difference between the refined grains and the whole grains.
Yeah. What about quinoa as a source of fiber?
Quinoa's great. Quinoa's pretty, I don't think it's quite as high in fiber, but it's an excellent source. Quinoa or couscous, and they're all going to have a little more protein too. That's the other thing with these whole grains is generally they're naturally a little bit higher in protein. So if someone's looking for that as maybe particularly in a vegetarian diet or also just as a having more protein keeps us more satisfied. So if you have a grain like that versus white rice, for example, then boy, it's going to be a lot more filling for the same amount that you eat, and you're going to have more fiber and you're going to have more protein. So, and quinoa is easy to cook. You don't have to cook it that long. And same thing with couscous. And now you can get the whole wheat couscous, which maybe takes 5 minutes to cook. It's very, very simple.
Yeah. Is the whole wheat couscous, does that pack really a better nutritional punch for you than just the regular?
Yeah, it's a little higher in the fiber, and I believe the protein's right about the same. Couscous is great in general, but This is very easy to use, too, because you can cook it up so fast. And so even, you know, if our listeners are interested in saying, gosh, how can I move towards a little bit more natural grains and whole grains, I would include, again, those beans and peas really in that realm, because lentils, for example, you can cook lentils very quickly. You can throw some spices in there and those, rinse them, and those will not take very long to cook at all. And just if you have that, maybe you make one whole grain a week. That's maybe a good way to think about it. Try to add one new whole grain a week and maybe one bean a week, one bean or pea, or even again just adding black beans to a salad or something like that. Boy, you boost the fiber, you boost the protein, and those are very low cost ways to enhance your diet.
Okay, let us say we take another call for you, Susan. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Hi, I apologize. I called earlier, but you said something which stimulated a question I've wondered about for a long time. You mentioned whole berries or grain. A lot of the better, you know, higher class breads have they'll either be, you know, wheat berry, or they'll have a lot of seeds on the outside, and clearly that's where a lot of the fiber content comes from. And my question is, and once again I'll hang up, is has it been shown experimentally, as opposed to it's just being assumed, that we are indeed able to digest all those things before they go all through our systems? And that's my question. Thank you.
Okay.
That's another good question. We don't necessarily digest everything. A lot of the insoluble fiber we actually don't digest, because that's fiber that will be broken down but go through the system and make our stool have more bulk. So no, we don't digest all that. The more of the soluble fiber seems to be the one that does have an effect more on these lipids and everything. But a lot of the insoluble fiber or roughage that we'd think of, we actually don't digest. It adds bulk. It goes through the system, but it's very helpful in that it slows, you know, it may slow down digestion initially, but then it moves things through later on in the colon, and it's helpful that way. So no, I don't know a lot of this fiber is not digested. It goes through the system. And so from a nutrition standpoint, we're not really getting a lot of nutrients from the fiber. We're getting nutrients more from the other things in the grain, for example, the B vitamins and wheat berries and so on.
Okay, I want to thank the listener for his call and take another call now. A listener on line two, I believe, in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. Is that me?
Yep, that's you.
Okay. First, I wanted to say couscous. Is it couscous? What's the whole wheat? Was it the whole wheat couscous? It's a pasta, actually, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah. You can prepare that just by pouring boiling water over it and letting it sit.
Without actually having to cook it.
Right. And it's great. You know, you don't just boil your water, pour it over, and you put a little saucer over your dish or something, and you're done. And you can add things to it, like you can add chopped tomatoes, or if you want a little, like Weight Watchers recommends, a little bit of fat, you could add a teaspoon of olive oil or something. And it's very, very easy. And the other thing I want to recommend is bulgur in lieu of rice. If you're not gluten intolerant, bulgur is a wonderful substitute for rice. You can, which is, it's basically cracked wheat, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get it at Strawberry Fields, at the Common Ground Food Co-op, and you probably can get it packaged with those would be bulk. Bob's Red Mill probably has it at some of the grocery stores, and it's similar to rice. It has a little more flavor. It has a lot more fiber. It has like maybe 5 grams per serving. I think a quarter cup dry has about 5 grams. And it just, I use it now in place of rice. And if you, it takes about as long to cook as brown rice, you know, not pre-cooked. So it takes maybe 20, 25 minutes. But what I usually do, I live by myself, so I make maybe 4 servings in a saucepan, and I divide them up and put them in the fridge, you know, 1 serving each, and they'll stay good for about a week, 5 days a week, something like that. You don't want to keep it cooked longer than that, but it's a really nice rice substitute.
Okay.
Now, when you make bulgur, do you, I mean, obviously you could use it to put in or make salads from it and things like that, but do you cook it with anything in it or just water, or do you flavor that any particular way?
I usually use it just with water, and then I'll have it with maybe beans or canned chicken or tomato. I don't usually cook it with anything.
Mm-hmm.
I usually use it just like you would use rice, you know, and put it on the plate plain. But you probably could, like frozen vegetables. I have added it to a slow cook recipe to which I added the last minute or the last hour, more like I'll add it, you know, a bag of frozen vegetables. So I've used it that way. But usually I just cook it plain and then add it. And you can also use it like a dry cereal, like a hot cereal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, you know, it's similar to Wheatina that way or something. And you can add a little sugar if you want and some fruit and some yogurt, and you can eat it that way.
That's great. And I love your idea with the whole wheat couscous, because I always cook that about, you know, 5 minutes or so and then turn it off. But I never thought to just put the boiling water on it. So that's easy, too.
That's very easy. If you have, you know, something, an electric kettle or something. Or you can even do it in the microwave. But it's really easy.
Mm, okay.
Sounds great. Sounds like you're a very healthy eater.
I try.
Thanks. Right. Thanks for the call this afternoon. And these are things that you can buy in bulk as well. Also
yes.
Save a little money that way. Let's take another call. Listener in Urbana, line 3. Hi.
I have two questions real quick, I hope. One is, I love frozen peas, and I wonder if you get the same health benefits from them as you do other legumes. The second question is, I bought some amaranth seeds, and I don't know how to prepare them other than maybe cook them up like a cereal, but beyond that, I have no idea. So I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Thanks for your questions.
Thank you. Well, frozen peas are also extremely high in fiber and extremely high in soluble fiber. I'm kind of looking here to see if it's significantly different. It's about 4.5 grams of fiber per a half cup serving. And if you look at legumes, the same amount, most lentils or navy beans or things like that are more like about 5 or 6 grams of fiber, so they might be a teeny bit less fiber, but still very good. That's very, very high, again, for just a half cup serving. So the peas are excellent. They're also going to have some good protein in them, and so they'll be great. I've not used amaranth a lot. I know, like you say, you can use that just as a grain, and you can cook that up the same way as you would other grains. And I know that it's in a lot of things and in grain mixtures, or sometimes wheat mixtures will have amaranth in it. And at the store in Strawberry Fields, we also have a lot of grains type products, crackers and things like that, that have amaranth in it, or cereal that has it in it. But what I would do, I guess, is like any of these other grains, I would experiment and just boiling it up till it gets soft so that you can feel that it's a good place to eat, and then try it by itself, try it with. I really like a lot of these grains if you just add in some chopped peppers and onions and things just to really spice mm-hmm. it up, add in some garlic. And, of course, that's all very good for us, or any fresh herbs. Mm-hmm. And that really boosts the flavor of any grain you have, too. So yeah, try some different things and call us back next month.
Okay, very good. Next we go to a listener in Urbana. Line 1, hi.
Hi. I miss the amount of dietary fiber you recommended. I use an All Bran, which seems to have 6 grams and supposedly is 24% of the dietary requirement. And I mix that with a toasted oats, very similar to Cheerios, and that seems to have 3 grams, which would be 12%.
Mm-hmm. You're almost halfway there.
Yeah.
How good would those be?
That's a great combination, because really the goal of what we're trying to get is at least 20 to 25 grams. Again, if we can get more like 30, that's better. But because we don't tend to eat that much fiber, a good 20 to 25 grams a day is a really good start. So for you, you're getting 9 grams right there. And if you added fruit to that breakfast or something, you could probably easily get 12 or 13. That'd be half of your day's recommended intake for fiber. So that's wonderful. There's a kind of a range of fiber recommendations, anywhere from 20 to even 30, 35 grams a day. But kind of shooting for that 25, which is what you see on the label, is really helpful. That 20 or 25 would be great. So that, again, that combination, you mix that toasted oats with your all bran, and then it's not just all bran. And I think that's more tolerable for a lot of people. So that's a good way to do it.
I usually chop an apple in with it and a few raisins. I also put in some snap peas the other day in the garden. I'm going to do what the Oriental gardeners do, if you keep it away from the rabbits. They use the vine as a stir fry.
Huh.
And I've tried it in the past. It seems to taste just like peas and quite acceptable. And avoids the problem that you can. It's very difficult to start peas in the in August,
mm-hmm,
and get them ripe. Usually they just burn up.
Yeah.
So that's another use for the pea, mm-hmm, if you're a gardener. I just thought I'd pass that along.
Yeah. Okay. And also, I've seen those greens in Asian grocery stores as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's a good thing. Well, thanks for the call. And let's take another call for Susan Kundrat, this caller in Terre Haute, Indiana, line 4. Good afternoon.
Yes, I may have missed this because I just tuned in, but could you recommend any kind of a website or a printed guide that would help people make decisions and understand a little bit about what you've been talking about?
Sure. One place you might want to look is the USDA website. You could just Google USDA and diet nutrition. The USDA now online, and it may be USDA.gov. But if you get on their general basic nutrition website for the USDA, they have separate websites that you can click on that will actually give you nutrition analysis of different foods based upon the key nutrient you're looking for. And so, for example, if you're really interested in fiber and you get on the USDA website, you Google fiber, and it'll bring you up to an area where you can actually say you want the top fiber foods for 100 grams of that food, then it may list pages and pages of the highest fiber foods available. And so that's a great resource, because if you're very interested in finding specific nutrients, then you can actually print off these printouts of different foods. There's a new, I wish I had the name of it in my head, but there's a new cookbook that's also out that is a high-fiber cookbook. One of my student interns just reviewed it, and I can't for the life of me remember the exact name of it, but that might be worth Googling too.
Yeah, actually today before the show, I Googled, or I put into the browser,
yeah,
you know, foods high in fiber,
mm-hmm,
recipes for high fiber meals, and you hit the jackpot.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
okay.
You know, they give you like, you know, one, you know, the first 10 of, they say 400,000.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. So,
but that's a good one. And there's also, there's often really good information on the American Heart Association website, because there's information on fiber. Some of the food companies have really good lists of fiber and different types of fiber. I'm thinking just off the top of my head, I know Quaker's had various different lists of not only oats but other high fiber foods, and so that might be a place to look as well for the fiber intake.
And extension,
of course, extension. Yes, extension always has a lot of great information on any nutrition topic.
Does that help? Okay, good. Is that wrapped up? Yes. So let's go and take another call. Listener in Champaign on line 2. Hi.
I have a quick question. I have a sister who has diabetes. She's coming for a visit, and a friend of mine said that she has been using something called chia seed. I think it's C-H-I-A, and then it kind of moderates how her body processes carbohydrates and sugars. And I thought I would just ask Susan to talk about it a little bit, how efficient it might or might not be. Just give me some information. I just don't know very much about it. Or maybe it wouldn't even be suitable. I don't know. So if you would talk about it just for a minute or two, I'm going to hang up and listen, and thanks so much.
Okay, thanks for the question.
Well, I don't know a lot about this particular seed. I do know that they're, you know, as far as diabetes and modulating blood sugars, there's a lot of interest in, you know, different types of seeds and even things like the flax seeds I mentioned earlier, and how if you add some of these fibers that have some gumminess to them, that may help with diabetes, partly because it slows down the digestion and absorption of nutrients. The chia seed, exactly, all I can think of is the chia pet in my brain. That's all I can think of. But I don't know that I've seen particular studies on the chia seed. Now, maybe there are things out there that I'm not aware of. But in general, the types of these whole grains like we were talking about, our particular seeds, are helpful. As far as the studies, I don't know that I have seen the particular. We're trying to look it up right now to see if there's anything new.
According to this website that I have, and this is just a real quick and dirty kind of look here, but this seed contains essential omega-3 oils, high in antioxidants and fiber. It is high in protein and lipids, low in sodium, and has fewer net carbs than most other grains. And the website also says we have more misinformation about it than we have knowledge. So it is a member of the mint family, originates in Mexico's Central Valley.
Very good. Yeah. Okay. So it sounds very similar to me to flax seeds, in that flax seeds are high in a more vegan source of omega-3s. They're high in those good oils, high in fiber. But it may be one of those things that's very popular now, but maybe we don't have that much research behind it as of yet. Probably wouldn't hurt unless there's something else in there that could be a problem. But I don't know that it would necessarily help a lot. Yeah. Anything more than other seeds or grains.
It's this website also said it is one of the forgotten crops of the Aztecs, so it's a very old thing. So, interesting question.
I'll have to find out more about that.
Yeah, maybe we can take up that topic again at a later date. So, here we are. We got maybe, Susan, a minute or two left. I know that you brought in something that if folks are interested, they can send us a self-addressed stamped envelope. And Susan's got a handout this month for us, Top 20 Health Recipe Ingredient Substitutions. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that there's a great recipe. You know, Mark Bittman, the New York Times, he does a column called The Minimalist.
Okay.
He's also got a show on public television. Last week, September 3rd, 2008, he has a terrific recipe, chickpea salad with ginger. And it has cumin, chickpeas, bell peppers, red onion, ginger, a little tiny bit of sugar, fresh lemon juice, salt and pepper, chopped fresh cilantro leaves. So
that sounds
really good. So, and it's very, very simple, whether you cook your chickpeas yourself or if you use canned chickpeas. So if you're interested in that, you might look for Mark Bittman's recipe from September 3rd, 2008, chickpea salad with ginger. There's also a fun video that goes with it. He is there making this. So
Sounds great.
Where we'll leave it. And if you want the Susan's handout, Top 20 Health Recipe Ingredient Substitutions, send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Afternoon Magazine, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Well, Susan, we'll see you next month.
Okay, thank you very much.
Very good. Susan Kundrat joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. She is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, and she is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net.